Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on Code Chat. With me today is Jason Short. Thanks for coming, Jason.
No problem.
And we are going to be talking about cloud topics. Cloud is somewhat popular these days.
You may have heard of it.
Have you heard of the cloud?
Yeah, actually there's several movies coming out talking about the cloud coming soon, which we won't mention.
It's a gigantic topic, and actually it's so exciting. I mean, here I am in a client development, mostly web development. This is where I've lived for the last few years, and I'm excited about cloud. I never really expected to be that excited about such a server topic, but I'm all excited about it just because it does so much.
And see, I'm a server guy who's done all kinds of server stuff. The cloud excites me because of the scale you can achieve. Stuff that before you had to like, hey, I need $2 million to go buy hardware for to do this experiment. They're like, is this really going to like turn into real money? Are we going to be able to turn in something? Now you can say, I need, you know, $5,000 to go do an experiment. And your boss is like, hey, we can do that.
We can do
that.
We'll
give you $5,000. You go off and run your experiment. And then they deny you later. But you can do stuff like that you couldn't do before.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that there may still be stragglers for whom the term cloud is somewhat nebulous.
Yep.
How would you define what cloud means?
So cloud,
and what it doesn't mean.
Cloud to me is just a bunch of servers that you don't own. You know, it's servers, someone else is running them, someone else is providing power, air conditioning, the basic computation load. They're doing all that stuff for you. You don't have to worry about it. You're providing something, a package, to run on someone else's server.
Yeah, but 15 years ago I had exactly that with my web host.
Correct. And web hosting was an early form of cloud. But when you talk to that web hoster, they had one location.
Yeah.
I think today's cloud, when you start talking about, hey, what are you going to give me for what I'm spending with you? More than one location is almost always a given today. Okay. Like, you have to have more than one location. Today we have 15 locations with Azure. There's a whole lot more coming along. But I think that type of, hey, I don't just want to have, great, you're a hoster in, you know, Arizona. That's fantastic. I know you don't have earthquakes. I know you don't have hurricanes. I know you don't have all these type things. But my users are in Asia. Are they still really going to have to, you know, run all the way across the ocean for every single trip of data that they need to ask about? That's just highly inefficient. If I can move that data to Asia, but it's the same website, it's the same package. I said, hey, I want one of them in the US, I want one of them in Asia, I want one of them in Australia. The users get the one closest to them. I think that's a big win. I think that's a big cloud difference.
So there's a lot of redundancy in the cloud?
It's redundancy. That I think that was some of the early, some of the early reasons why they were doing it. But I think it's also high availability. But I think it's also more than that. It's the, hey, I want to get my data to the closest endpoint wherever my user is, that last mile problem.
Yeah.
If I can get, you know, into Asia and everyone, all my users are coming from Asia, I'm going to just cut down that latency. It's going to be a better response time for the user. It's just going to be a better experience. I think that's what it's more about today.
Yeah. So would you say that the considerations that have to be made in order for your app to take advantage of these cloud introductions, the elasticity and so on, the scalability really,
yep.
Would you say that they are difficult considerations that have to be made, or is it just kind of a new paradigm that developers need to?
It's actually an old paradigm.
Oh.
So if you remember, we used to have single core processors. You wrote single threaded applications and you took care of, I'm going to go from step A to step B, and everything in between, and it's all going to happen linearly, one thing after the other. Then we got multi-core chips, and people started saying, oh, I can start this thing, start something else, and they could come out of order. Now you got multi-threaded applications. It got a lot more complicated to debug, got a lot more complicated when you got, you know, any bug that happened. I think when you go to the cloud, you actually step back and you start writing single-threaded code again. You start thinking serially instead of parallel, because the parallelism comes from more instances, not complexity in your code.
Okay.
I had a company who had a massive, massive application. It had hit its max peak load that they can handle. 64 core boxes, 2 terabytes of RAM. They couldn't get a bigger box. The app needed to scale bigger. And they were like, what are we going to do? I'm like, you got to scale out. You can't scale up anymore. At some point, you're going to hit that. Maybe your app can't go that large. Maybe it can go a little larger. It doesn't matter. At some point, you're going to hit a limit. Because I have partners now who scale to 5,000 cores in the cloud. You're never going to get a 5,000 core box sitting in your office. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
At least I don't think so. It may happen at some point.
we should never say never.
Yeah, never say never. But taking that app and decomposing it back and saying, hey, just deal with one request at a time. Stop trying to do all this optimization. Stop trying to keep everything in one box. It simplified their app. And their developers really resisted at first because they spent a lot. I mean, it's blood, sweat, and tears to get that multi-threaded code to work.
Yeah.
And when they finally got it working, they're super proud of it, and they should be. I mean, it was hard work. But now to say, take all that out and go back to this single, you know, hey, we're just going to, you worry about your job and don't worry about what the rest of the system is doing. That took a long time. Mm-hmm. I'd say that took them 6 months to really internalize that it is faster, and it is, to write, hey, serial, you know, procedure type code. But then when you go to run it and you're like, but I'm never going to get the scale that I need. And then you go add 20 more instances, add 20 more instances, add 20 more instances. You get your scale by scaling up.
Yeah.
And I think that's where developers are really struggle is that mind shift of, hey, but I learned all this cool, you know, parallel library stuff and I want to take advantage of it all. And so you still can, but you need to think of your jobs as running on multiple machines, not on a single box.
I wish I remember who coined the term. I don't remember where I heard this, but the terms essence and ceremony. There's the essence of what you're trying to do, and then there's the ceremony you have to go through in order to make it happen. And I feel like I'm glad that the paradigms that the cloud is introducing are actually old ones, and then in a way we're going back to something more simplistic. We're not just getting deeper and deeper and more complicated, but we're getting simpler, and we're just expressing the essence of what we want to do. And all of the business of getting 1,000 workers to make it happen because that's what it's going to take.
Yep.
All of that scaling business can happen in an abstract fashion. I don't have to worry about it in my code. It doesn't have to be done again.
It actually pushes it back out to the IT side of the company. In a lot of companies, the IT has been relegated to security patches, you know, updating the boxes, firewalls. And in a lot of those companies, they feel threatened by the cloud because, like, hey, I'm going to lose my job because I'm not the one in control of the firewall anymore. I'm not in control of this. I tell them, no. Nothing could be further from the truth. You're actually more important now because you're the one monitoring it day to day. You're the one who's actually looking at it and saying, hey, we had a spike here in traffic. Why? How many more instances? You can actually now say, if I scale this thing from 50 instances down to 40 during an off-peak time, I just saved the company money.
Yeah.
You have a real dollar value to go back to your boss and say, this is what I did for the company this month.
Yeah.
And the IT guys years ago, I never thought of it that way because they're so used to getting paid by the switch they install, by the firewall that they configure. They're not used to thinking in terms of, you can actually save the company money.
So
it's a shift.
So all the IT pro guy has to do is make sure he doesn't give a login to his superiors so that they can see how easy it is to get these kind of numbers.
Yeah. And actually, we do have some IT pros who have like really complicated systems that are just calling PowerShell underneath the hood. You know, they have all these like super complicated dashboards, and I have one partner, their control app, they call it Master Control.
And, which sounds complicated already.
Yeah, it is literally, I think there's 700 buttons on one form.
And 698 of them don't do anything?
And no one knows what most of them do. Don't click that one, click this one. And the guy basically told me, he said, yeah, underneath this, we call PowerShell for everything.
Yeah.
They didn't have to write a lot of code.
Start with an image of a cockpit, of a Boeing cockpit.
Yeah.
That's great. What does this whole cloud movement imply to the average Joe writing software as far as an architectural standpoint?
That's a great question. I think architecturally, it simplifies your architecture. You don't have to worry about, am I building N-tier? Am I building client-server? Am I building whatever? It's a service. If you start thinking everything I deliver, and inside Microsoft especially, we've been talking a lot about this. Satya has this big cloud-first, mobile-first strategy. And everything we build is a service. You don't have to think about, am I going to build a client-server? Who's going to install the server? Who's going to configure the server? You always put the service in the cloud. Now, what are the clients that are going to connect to it? Doesn't matter. As long as I build a REST endpoint and I build one of them as a reference, I can hand off to someone else and say, take this one and now go write it for an iPhone, go write it for Android, go write it for something else, because the service stays the same. I think that simplifies a lot of decisions for developers. They can say, I'm just going to build a service and I'm going to make sure I expose everything through REST. Even if it is a client server app, that service could be hosted locally or it could be hosted in the cloud. So you just build it once. Build it as a service-oriented architecture, and then worry about where you're going to run it. That's a business decision. Don't get hung up on the, hey, am I going to have 5, 8, 9 instances or 3? Don't worry about any of that type of stuff.
Gotcha.
Let the scale dictate what type of hardware you're going to run on. Just build the service to solve the business need.
Okay. So are we actually moving the logic of our app up into the cloud?
In some cases, yeah. In some cases, you may say, hey, the client doesn't have a lot of processing power. It's a mobile device. Or you may say the client has a lot of power. I know it's a big, thick, you know, heavy machine sitting here that's got a lot of computational power, it's got a lot of RAM. It shouldn't really change the way that you build the service. The service or whatever the business logic is should still be somewhere centrally located, somewhere on a server that it can either send it down to the client and the client can run it, in the case of a big, thick server client. I have a partner who does bond yield derivative calculations, and they have an Excel plugin that if the user wants to not use any Azure at all, in Excel they can say, run this. And then they get a little, it's gonna take 24 hours or 48 hours, and they go, yeah, let me rethink that. Let me actually spin this back out to the cloud. It takes the DLL of the business logic, ships it out to a service in Azure, runs the calculations across a whole lot of boxes, gives them back their answer in a few minutes.
Wow.
So I think that the where someone wants to run something should not be your determining factor on how you're going to build something. Worry about solving the problem. Don't worry about where it's going to run.
Okay. So that's architecture. What about monetization for your average Joe? How does this change the monetization? So I'm not thinking as much about the corporate scenarios. I'm thinking about the guy that's working either by himself or with a small group on a game or on a business on a consumer app.
Yeah, corporate scenarios, it gets a little different. But from the small startup, let's say, for example, we do a lot of hackathons in my group.
What is your group? Can you tell us that real quick?
I'm in DPE at Microsoft. And so we work with a lot of large commercial organizations, but we do hackathons as well. And we will do a weekend hackathon. We have a bunch of startups come in. And the startups may say, hey, we don't have any servers. We don't have any infrastructure. We got two guys and two laptops, and you know, this is our business.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, where do you host your website? We don't. We don't have one yet. And you go and you show them Azure websites, and you say, you can spin this up today, like right now.
Yeah.
And we do have some of them sometimes who come in, and they have a fully formed idea, but it requires more processing power than what they can get out of their laptop. And they're like, boy, this sure would be great if we could run this somewhere else. And it's like, you can. You can actually put that in Azure. And we've had guys come in and go from nothing, no running code whatsoever, to by Sunday night having a complete product in the cloud they could go show to VCs. And the real difference there in monetization is they didn't have to go buy any hardware. They didn't have to wait for it to get shipped in and hire some guy to set up or spend their own time setting it up, configuring it. Is it secure? Do we have a big enough pipe? You know, all of those questions just go away. You only pay for what you use. I think that's the big thing for a small company, is to say, is it more expensive per hour than me buying a server? Maybe. That's debatable if you start adding in the labor rates of like maintaining that box and patching it. And, you know, there's all kinds of crazy calculations around that. But if you just look at from start to idea running, what's the fastest way? The cloud is absolutely the fastest way to do it.
Yeah.
You could take an idea, prototype it on your local dev box, push it up to the cloud, get someone else to hit it, show it to them, hey, do you want to invest money, yes or no?
Well, and that's just Azure websites. I mean, if they need a media solution, there's Azure Media Services. If they need a database, there's that. And that's all kind of packed into the same thing.
And I think it's amazing the number of startups who come in and say, we have this huge idea, but we really don't know if that's what customers want. And we say, fine, do a minimum viable product. Scale all that back. What's the one thing you think people are willing to pay for? Yeah, you got 50 features. A lot of those are ancillary. You know, it's for like a channel or white labeling. Forget all that stuff. What's your core? What's the meat? What are people willing to pay for? Prototype that. Get it in front of some people. Get that feedback loop started fast. Because if you spend a year building all this other 50 features, and then someone says, it's almost there, but I want you to, you know, swivel by 20 degrees.
Yeah.
A lot of times that 20 degrees breaks everything else that you've done.
Right.
So get the prototype out there quick, build the minimum viable as fast as you possibly can, and spend the least amount of money.
Yeah.
Because in the cloud, if you're not using it, like when you go to bed at night, you can actually turn everything off and you're paying nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and until you actually go live and you have real customers, you don't have to pay for it every hour to be up and running.
Yeah.
Whereas if you buy a server, you go on vacation for 2 weeks, that's sunk cost. The server's still there. And you're not utilizing it anymore, but the server's still there.
Yeah.
Whereas in the cloud, you go on vacation for 2 weeks, turn it off.
Turn it off. Not paying anything for two weeks. Yeah, and I would add that if you're a startup, you have to understand that Microsoft really loves startups, and we have this offering called BizSpark.
BizSpark
and,
is awesome.
Yeah, you can join up on BizSpark. I don't know if you knew this, but if I'm a startup and I got a team of 7 other guys, I can sign up for BizSpark as a startup. I get my dashboard and I get $150 of credit in Azure. And each of the other 7 guys in my team, I can add them to my BizSpark account, and each of them gets $150 in credit in Azure.
Awesome.
Per month. And I know I have basically the same thing personally. And for my $150 in credit, I spend about $70. And I've got a number of websites, a lot of databases, mobile services. I've even got a media service with some video up there and some VMs. I usually leave those off. Otherwise, they eat my credit.
Yeah, VMs eat your credit fast.
Yeah. I actually got a really helpful message the other day. It said, at your current rate, you're going to run out of credit before the end of the month. You know, do you want to change your spending? And I go, well, sure, I want to turn off that VM I'm not using.
Hey, I'm actually glad you brought that up. So VM versus PaaS. So VM is, it's like having a machine in your office, right?
Yeah.
You set it up, you configure everything, you install all this thick software. PaaS, which is just platform as a service, is I have a CS package, think of it as a zip file. And in it, I have an app that I need to run, same as when I had a big VM. But in the package, I say, I need .NET 4.5, I need Java, I need Python. I used to set up a list of requirements, and then you have your code. Azure will deploy it onto a box for you, make sure all your requirements are met, install all your NuGet packages, do whatever it needs to done, and then call your onStart method, and you can go do things. That's a fantastic alternative to running VMs. I think a lot of devs still think around, I have to configure the box.
Right.
You don't do that anymore. You configure your app, and you say, here's what my app needs to run, and where's my data going to be stored? It's probably in blob storage or in a database somewhere, some back end. I'm glad you brought that up. VMs versus PaaS. PaaS is definitely the way to go.
And I feel like we're kind of in the middle of an evolution there, right? Because it's no mental leap to spin up a machine in the cloud. It's kind of like spinning one up under my desk.
Yep.
And there's also, it might be that I'll just copy my code over, install it on this machine in the cloud, and I don't really have to do anything. But for my next greenfield application, well, now maybe I need to start thinking about platform as a service, because then I don't have to be in the business of server management, install patches.
The real problem with building your app on a VM is that you're probably storing your data in that VM.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you exceed the capacity of that VM?
Mm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now you got to spin up another one, you got to reconfigure it, now where do you put your data? Now you got to start extract. If you went PaaS in the first place, your data is never in the PaaS node. Data always has to be somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It forces you to build that abstraction layer away from your data.
Yeah.
Then when you start and saying, hey, now I need two of these, now I need three of these, they're literally just carbon copy.
Yeah.
You don't have to go back and re-architect your app.
Or if there's a problem, just reset.
Yeah, which that's actually another great point. So in a VM, if you have V1 and V2 of your app, you need to either clone that VM and go install V2 and test it and everything, and then say, okay, this one's now production and that one's now the old one, or when do you do that swap over and how do you migrate your data and all that type of stuff. In PaaS, built in for free, you don't have to do anything, is a staging and a production environment.
Oh yeah.
So you can have a production environment that's still running V1, you can have a staging that's V2, you sign off on it, and then you do this thing called a VIP swap, which is where you swap the virtual IPs, and now what was staging is now production.
And it takes 3 man days?
No, it takes seconds for you to get that VIP done. But the beauty here is, your V1 didn't go away.
Yeah.
The data is still all wherever you had the data before. If something goes wrong, you can actually VIP swap back.
Yeah.
It's a nice, easy migration to say, hey, this was a bad idea. We found a bug. VIP swap back. Go fix your bugs. Test it again. And then swap.
I was in manufacturing engineering, writing software maybe a few years ago anyway. And I remember spending weekends switching to production. And then at least in one occasion, spending another weekend rolling back because of issues.
Yeah, rollbacks are painful. Especially when you have huge amounts of packages that have to be applied in the right order. Now how do you uninstall them without uninstalling everything?
Yeah, you've got upper management involved.
Yeah.
What's the status?
Yeah, I think PaaS is a beautiful solution. I have a partner who does, the same partner does bond yield analysis on Wall Street. So they have, from when the market closes on Friday to when the market opens on Monday morning, they have to be done. That's it. That's the total amount of time.
Yeah.
If they're not up, by the time the market opens Monday morning, they're losing it some millions of dollars per minute that they're down.
Yeah.
Because traders are sitting idle at this point. They had Hurricane Superstorm Sandy hit. They lost about half their server capacity because their servers were in their basement. Don't put your servers in the basement. That's a bad place to put servers. Flooded, lost a bunch of servers. They had to basically, hey, let's put all this stuff into Azure. Now, after we've been working with them, I guess about 18 months now, they're actually no longer running anything on-prem except quality control, regression testing, stuff that they want, that they just haven't moved yet.
Close,
but everything in production is now in Azure. They don't pay anything for it during the week. Friday afternoon, they start grabbing boxes. They grab pools of 100 at a time until they get about 5,000 to 7,000, depending on the work they need to do. They're actually done by Saturday. And if all the tests come out clean and there's no problems, they spin them all down Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
If there's a problem, they have a whole nother day to rerun all that data.
Wow.
To them, they told me it was like every Friday night, like someone holding a shotgun to your head and going, you better get it right because you got one chance.
Mm-hmm.
So all week long, they were stressed out about, hey, did we test this? Now they said, it's not a big deal if you get it wrong because you have Sunday to fix it.
Yeah.
And not only that, they actually, because they don't have all these big capital expenditures all the time to go to their boss with, management is super happy because it's like, oh, now, hey, we need another 2,000 servers to go test some theory. It's not this big capital expenditure. You can actually say, yeah, hey, we're going to go run this one test. Here's the expected result. Here's what it's going to generate revenue. Bosses are like, check, check, go.
Yeah, and it's going to cost less than what we used to spend in a minute.
Yes.
Yeah, where I was actually working in aerospace was on the 787 program at Boeing. So you can imagine that whenever the factory is down at Boeing, there are a few dollar signs going out the window.
Yeah.
There are a few people with their shorts in a bunch for sure.
Plus, if you miss a deadline, you're paying penalties.
Awful. Hey, what do you suppose it means when our CEO says mobile first, cloud first? We've all heard Satya say that. What does that mean to you?
So this is Jason Short's take on it. It's not the official Microsoft position.
Great.
I personally think that means when anything inside Microsoft, we don't think, how do we ship that on a CD anymore?
Okay.
You have an idea for a project. You have an idea for something. You don't have to go make a case for, here's how many millions of PCs there are. Here's how we're going to sell it. Here's the channel. You don't have to do any of that. You can say, here it is. Here's my idea. I'm going to provide it as a service. We're going to test it. We're only going to spin up one instance. We're going to test market it right there. Our time to market is very, very short. We can pivot really, really fast because it's just going to the cloud. We don't have to find a channel. We don't have to find salespeople. We don't have to go through any of that. We can just set it up in the cloud. You can go find 10 test clients, let them play with it, give you the feedback quick, iterate over it rapidly. And then what are the implications for the mobile side of it? It's kind of a, you can build one, again, as a reference architecture, and then you can say, hey, now I can scale myself out.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a guy here who knows Ruby, there's a guy who knows Java, there's a guy who knows Python. Can you guys go build me SDKs to help me with that? Yes, yes, yes. Go. It's all REST underneath the hood.
Yeah.
I think there's also just this huge internal mind shift of, it's not Windows first anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the service is probably still running on Windows, either a VM or PaaS or something in the cloud. But what's that first client look like? It's probably an API today. It's not a thick client.
Interesting.
Now, could a thick client be built? Absolutely. You know, that may be on the roadmap. But to get your minimum viable, to get, you know, some corporate vice president to sign off on your crazy harebrained idea, you can now go do it without having to pitch your idea, sell the idea, get a whole lot of capital expenditure, need a big dev team, and you know, you don't really know if you succeeded until you've gone and sold it.
Yeah.
I think now we build stuff. We test market it, we do A/B testing, we do all these in-flight testing stuff, and then we start marketing it to whoever needs it most.
Yeah.
So I think that like Roslyn is a good example of the compiler in the cloud. Visual Studio Team is the first people to take advantage of that. It's just a no-brainer there. But I think other parts of Microsoft are going to start taking advantage of it because now it's a service. It's no longer just built for Visual Studio. Now other people can take advantage of that. We actually found that way. I used to be in the SQL group, and we actually found that stuff that we built, people were using in ways we didn't foresee. I think that's going to happen a lot, and I think that's what Satya's really talking about when he says cloud first. If you build it for the cloud, you solve your business need.
Yeah.
You get other people inside the company to start consuming that service. They take a dependency on you. Then they come to you and say, well, you could add this. It's like, well, we didn't think of that. You know, that wasn't something that was our core scenario, but yes. We could add that. We could add this. Pretty soon, you're now adding new business value without having to spin up whole new product lines.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge, huge shift for Microsoft. To be able to say, it's not about Windows. You know, I think Word, Excel, all those coming to the Mac, I think that's a huge, huge, it's not a huge technical feat. Anyone could have written that type of app. I think it's huge for Microsoft to have gone and done it.
Yeah.
Because for us to say, hey, you know what? It's not just about the PC. It's not just about the Surface. Just not about Windows. It's about the user. Where do they have their data?
Yeah.
I think the Skype acquisition was kind of an early lead on that because Skype already did all the platforms. And it was kind of like, you know what? This is actually a good thing. People can use the same Skype app no matter where they are.
Yeah.
They don't have to think about, oh, I need to go get my X device in order to do Skype. It's whatever device you have already does Skype.
Right.
OneDrive is another great example of that. I think we're going to start seeing that more in the company as different business groups start embracing that. I think we're going to see more and more of this. Hey, it's not about the individual device. It's about whatever the business need is, whatever that app is, and it needs to be able to be consumable from everywhere.
People are still shocked by that. I mean, whenever I have something like OneNote on my phone and a friend with an iPhone says, oh, hey, that works pretty slick. I go, you know, you've got it, too.
Yeah.
He goes, really?
People are always amazed at OneNote. And it's another great example
of,
it's been there for a while. Without the SkyDrive integration across all the platforms, I think it people were like, oh, so my notebooks are local?
Yeah.
And they just didn't get the value behind it.
Yeah.
But I think now saying your OneNote is actually always in the cloud, no matter where you are, mm-hmm. you have the same OneNote. You have the same documents, the same everything. If you have a device with pen and you want to draw something, switch to that, draw it in the OneNote, then switch back to one with the keyboard and type on it.
There's your drawing.
There's your drawing. You know, you can do those types of things. And I think it does change the way people perceive OneNote, but I think it also changed the way they perceive Microsoft.
Yeah, totally. And oh, by the way, OneNote has this rich API the whole thing's built on that you can interface with. In fact, I'm going to have James Lau on the show here soon.
Great.
And he's going to talk about exactly that. So that's pretty
cool. I think Office 365 is just getting to that point.
Really?
So Word today, you could write COM plugins and you could do all these other different type of plugins, but it required Word to be on your box. Mm-hmm. Now with Office 365, Word's in the cloud. You only access it through an HTML interface. There's now plugins coming to that where you can start writing those. Hey, I used to have this really rich, you know, doodad that my company used for something, but it was only available for people that had Word 97 or Word 2003.
Yeah.
It had all these versioning and all this stuff. Now that it's just in the cloud, you say, I have it. And now not only is it available to people in my company, I can turn around and sell that.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see that a lot of these interdepartmental type apps that people built just for themselves because they needed it, other people have the same need. It may not be a revenue source for the company. Like, they may not want to sell it because then you have to support it and there's maintenance and, you know, lawyers get involved. They may not want to do that. But the company may say, you know what, this will build goodwill. This will build brand recognition. This will build people knowing that we have good developers, even though we're not known as a development company.
Mm-hmm.
I have an electric company that I work with, as an example. No one thinks, hey, the electric company's got great devs. People don't think that. They actually have a huge dev team that does fantastic work and they open source almost everything they do.
Wow.
And they're using that as a brand outreach. When they want to go hire someone, they go to universities, they show them all their open source work, and they say, look at all these cool projects you could be working on.
And then they get good devs.
They get good devs. It's no longer a, oh, it's the electric company. I don't want to go work for them. It's, hey, look at all these cool projects they're doing. I don't care that they're an electric company.
Yeah.
I can see their code. I can see they're doing cool stuff. I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, who cares whether the actual entity you're working with is a Volt or a whatever is cooler than a Volt.
Yeah, Quark. I don't know.
I've done that before. I've made decisions to move into a company where the business domain was not exciting, and I'm completely fine with that because the technology is.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more of that as companies start building services, as they start exposing APIs. Have you looked at Epiphany?
No.
So we bought Epiphany. Microsoft bought Epiphany, which is an API management service. So there are tons of APIs out there, as you can imagine, especially as people are building more and more of these services. How do you manage those APIs when you have a version 1 and a version 2?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make them discoverable? How do you document them? How do you let third parties take advantage of them? That's the goal of Epiphany. And they're actually integrating that into the Azure portal. It's going to be in preview, I believe, coming next quarter.
And this is all public information?
Yeah, it's all public information. And the API set, you should actually talk to the guys who are on that team because I'm going to do it total injustice.
Okay.
But they actually did a talk to one of my partners, and my partners were like, eh, boring API management stuff. And they came out of that presentation going, holy crap, that was exciting. So yeah, you should definitely go talk to those guys.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah.
Good. Hey, what do you think is down the road, or maybe what do you hope is down the road for cloud? Like, where do you see all of this going?
So, today, the big pain point to me is if you build a PaaS solution and you say, great, I understand this CS project thing, I understand building these abstractions, I have this computational logic that I can replicate out, I have a storage layer that is under the hood being replicated for me, I have an HA, great, you took a lot of plumbing off my plate, but I can only run it in the cloud. What if I also want to be able to sell that same solution to a company who's just paranoid about the cloud, they hate the cloud, someone got burned once, whatever,
mm-hmm.
they want to run it on-prem.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I have a lot of partners who run into this scenario, our cloud is not where they are.
Mm-hmm.
The Middle East is a good example. If you're in Saudi Arabia, we don't have a data center there.
Hmm.
There are businesses in Saudi Arabia, shocking, I know, but there are businesses there, and they have the need to run software.
So they still could, but it would all be coming from somewhere else, so there would be an inherent latency.
There'd be an inherent latency, and you get to some countries like China, where they have a firewall in place, you have bottlenecks, that's just a bad idea. So CloudOS, which is something else you should probably talk to those guys, have them on as
well. Write that down.
So CloudOS is the ability to take your Azure service and run it on-prem.
Yeah.
and to build these cool hybrid type scenarios where you may have a client server or whatever the model is of the app on-prem, and then you say, you know what, we just ran out of capacity, or we need to take these servers, these 50 servers offline while we upgrade them. What do we do with their workloads? You can move their workloads to the cloud, take those down, go upgrade them, whatever, and then bring the workload back if you want to. It enables some cool scenarios like that.
Yeah.
But I think that once the dev just starts thinking about his problem and stops thinking about where it's deployed, I think that's when we're going to see the next big leap in either developer buy-in or productivity, whatever you want to call it.
So then do I just end up with a box under my desk that I log into and I see the Azure portal?
Yeah. It's not that clean today. There's a lot of rough edges.
Sure.
But that's where we're going. It's basically you as a developer don't care. You just say deploy this and you point it at a box. The box, if it says, hey, we don't have any storage, it'll send you back an error message saying, I don't have the storage. You said you need 2 terabytes of storage. I don't have that much storage. You said you want 500 instances. I'm only 10 cores. I can't do anything for you. But that's where we're going. So you can actually start setting up clusters and say, hey, people with departmental apps can start deploying here locally. And then when you either prove it out or you're just exceeding your capacity, you can say, and now move it to the cloud.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a huge shift. A lot of the companies that I talked to today are legacy. They have big legacy applications. And they're like, well, moving it to the cloud is painful. If we rewrite it for PaaS, now we can't deploy it on-prem. So they're in this weird spot where they're like, we got to support both of these things for some period of time.
Yeah.
I think when we get the CloudOS story right and it's out there so that it's more seamless of a deployment model, I think that's really going to help.
Yeah. It is feeling like we're moving to a place where I am doing more of the essence of my task, just describing my essence. I don't feel like we're necessarily at a place yet where for a developer, there's less to learn. There still is so much for a developer to learn just to put things in place. But whenever I watch the tutorial and figure out how to do XYZ, at the end of the day, I realize I did a lot in that one tutorial, a lot more than I would have 5 years ago. In the 30-minute tutorial, I'm doing all kinds of crazy stuff. There's still a lot for us as developers to know. I don't feel like we need to worry about our jobs going anywhere. I mean, all this logic still has to be implemented. It's just that it's taken some of that ceremony away. So it's a good story.
I call it plumbing. I want to do less plumbing, more logic. Let me stick with what I'm good at.
Yep.
And I don't want to think about, oh, now I got to go serialize this data. What does that look like? Where do I put it? I don't want to think about any of that.
Sure.
I want to be able to say, put the data somewhere that I'm going to get back to and encrypt it for me, make it secure, make sure I'm the only one that has access to it. I want it like permissions like that. I don't want to have to think in terms of, oh, go create a key. Where do I get this pair? How do I sign? I don't want to think about any of that type of stuff. And I think that's where we're going with a lot of the cloud services, especially Windows Azure Active Directory.
Yeah.
I think that the Active Directory in the cloud is going to change the way people build off into their applications. Mm. Today, it is a lot of this certificate-based stuff. It's a lot of like, oh, I got to go set up a server to be the primary domain controller or the backup domain controller.
It's wretched, honestly.
It is. It's painful. And I think going to AD in the cloud, you can just say, provision me one.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to add Jeremy. And now Jeremy left the company. His record gets deleted. He no longer has access. I don't have to remember to go delete you. I don't have to remember any of that kind of stuff. I think that that's going to change the way, especially internal department apps for line of business type stuff, then it's going to radically change the way they build things.
Yeah.
And the AD guys are doing a phenomenal job. I mean, they're revving at such a tremendous pace.
Cool.
I mean, you look at 3 years ago, Azure had a small division of Microsoft, few hundreds of people. And they were shipping twice a year. They had a bunch of stuff they were shipping, but it was kind of this core services. We were still building infrastructure, building stuff up. Today, there are thousands of people working on Azure, and they're shipping weekly. And the number of features that are under development are in the hundreds. It's no longer, hey, this is broken, you're blocking, three people. Now it's, this is broken, you're blocking 1,000 teams downstream of you.
Yeah.
It's a big dependency graph.
Right.
And you think about that complexity of that scale of like, hey, how do I have this one thing that thousands of people depend upon? How do I prevent myself from breaking them? I think a lot of those lessons that we're internally with our own dog food, we're paying some of those prices. But I think we're learning at cloud scale, which is kind of a new term.
Yeah.
How do you manage those type of things? I think Epiphany was one of those things that we said, you know what? This is like everyone needs this and we don't have it. These guys are already doing it. We should probably acquire them because it's a good solution. And I think that we're going to find more of those as we get a little further along, we get a little bit more mature. I mean, I like to say that, the PC really, people building desktop apps until VB and the GUI type development environments happened, it was just for hardcore nerds. Like the casual business guy who needed to solve a problem, he wasn't going to write an app to go solve it. Today he could. Mm-hmm. It could be using Lightswitch. He could be using, you know, Visual Basic. Mm-hmm. He could be using a lot of different things. And I think that enabling them to use the cloud is going to open up a whole new type of business developer. Sure. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of right now is that, like the company in New York, they have a lot of data scientists. They have 43 PhDs and are just math PhDs. They don't know anything about programming, but they know how to write, you know, hey, here's an algorithm to do the following. When we can get those guys where they can build, deploy, and run something in the cloud without having to understand all
that's phenomenal, yeah.
It's going to be phenomenal.
Now all of a sudden there's 43 PhDs that are doing some of this logic implementation, right.
And today those guys have to go request a dev, find a server, you know, they have, it's a big deal
learn
for them to test the theory.
Dev language.
Yes. How do you explain to them what I need? You know, no, I meant not equal or whatever. Yeah, and so a lot of those conversations become simpler when they are the source of truth. They can actually test it themselves. I'm seeing a lot of that with Excel right now.
Sure.
That Excel is kind of a universal BI tool, you know, lightweight programming. And a lot of the things that I see these companies like these guys in New York, that they have a plugin in Excel, they're enabling it with Azure today. So the guy using it doesn't have to understand any of that complexity. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a lot more of that, where you're just going to, you'll be in some CAD program or in something, and you'll say, hey, I need this to run. And they'll say, it's going to take a week. And you'll be, no, I don't want to wait that long. pop this thing out to Azure, get it back to me in 24 hours or 48 hours.
Yeah.
And I think that that slider of how fast do you want it should be more important than how complex is it to achieve.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be huge.
Yeah, and if you can turn that slider up and know that it might mean dollar signs, but you're buying time, then that's then you have
time
that option.
Money.
Yeah.
Time is money. And you can say to people, you can run it in a week on your laptop. Don't turn it off. Don't update it. Don't power. Make sure you have it installed.
And don't run Netflix.
Yeah, don't do anything else. Or you can spend $100 and get this thing to run in Azure. And
yeah.
Especially, you know, a lot of these big companies that time is literally money for them.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, no-brainer. Done.
Yeah.
I think for the devs, it's a little harder because they're still thinking in terms of, well, I have data here and I have an app here. How do I ship that data around? There's still some plumbing work for us to do there around, hey, the way Windows 8 works with your apps today, that you install your app on one machine and it can, you know, migrate the data across multiple boxes. So if you log in on your laptop and you log in on your Surface, you're at the same point in the same app with the same everything. Mm-hmm. We need to get that muscle memory in developers who are not building store apps, who are just building stuff in general, that your data needs to be with you no matter where you are. It's not about your app. Mm-hmm. That logic should be able to run anywhere. It could be running on my phone. Maybe I don't want it to. It'll kill my battery. But it could run on my phone.
Yeah.
And why not?
And maybe it's able to intelligently switch, like run it in the cloud now, but move it down to the phone under some scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, the thing I'm excited about for the cloud and the future of the cloud is the integration with the whole concept of the Internet of Things. And, you know, the cloud kind of being always there, we always have contact with the, you know, that, what's the word I'm looking for, the surface area of the cloud, you know, the APIs are all right there, and so they can be hit from the car, from the watch, from the phone, from the refrigerator, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Everything's there.
So one of the companies I'm working with, the electric company actually, think of thermostats, think of equipment that's out there in a real world that no one's monitoring today, but it has access to the internet either through Wi-Fi or through power over Ethernet, different things like that. They're starting to collect all that data. They're ingesting all that data into Azure today. And they were saying, hey, we noticed that, you know, in this region, these generators fail at certain times of the year and we don't know why. So we brought them in, we did a hackathon and we said, hey, let's look at this data from a big data perspective. Let's start pumping the data through Hadoop and let's look at it. Now let's bring in ambient temperature, outside temperature in the region. What was happening to the power companies in that locale at that time? Was there an earthquake? Was there seismic activity? This is all data you could get publicly and start mashing it up. And we actually found that most of their generator failures were internal safety systems turning off because of a seismic tremor. So they did the right thing. They shut down because any vibration added to a spinning motor is really, really bad. And so they shut themselves down, but the diagnostics is locked away behind a firewall.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have access to that. Now, probably the guy who was running that plant does, but they don't, and all they know is it went offline. There was something wrong.
Yeah.
And being able to do stuff with your data that you can't do today, this type of, hey, let's take a mashup of data and look at it from a totally different, unique perspective, that's things that really get me excited about big data in the cloud.
Yeah.
That I think we're going to open up what people can do that they can't do today.
Yeah.
And you have to change your thinking. I mean, I had my own company before I joined Microsoft.
Dramatically.
we had 63 servers. So if we had a problem that was bigger than 63 servers, it got shot down, just automatic. Like, no, we're not going to go spend a bunch of more money. There were a number of times that we had problems that were like, boy, that would be really cool to solve, but we think we have the expertise to do it, but we don't have the hardware to do it. And the capital risk to go borrow a bunch of money to buy all this stuff to prove out this theory was just too great. We killed the idea. When I go back to companies today and I talk to them and I say, hey, think of things that you've dismissed in the last 5 years and said, it's too expensive, too risky, we don't think we're going to be able to do this. Go back and revisit those ideas. Several companies have come back to me and said, you know what? You were right on the money. There was stuff we threw away saying it was impossible. Now we're actually doing it because the risk is so much lower. Mm-hmm. That's going to accelerate innovation.
Well, and likewise, whenever you guys are sitting there with zero jobs to do, you've still got 63 servers you're paying for, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're paying for them. Yeah, that's sunk cost, right?
Yeah, sure is. So we've got to wrap this up, but thank you very much for coming on the show and talking to me. It's really been a good conversation. Thank you guys for joining us. I hope there was some real value in this. We're talking to developers everywhere, and they're charged with all this innovative, fun, I don't know, all this interesting cloud stuff. It all matters to them. So, thanks for joining us, and I'll see you the next time on Code Chat.